Hello and welcome to the House Einstein podcast, the best podcast in the universe on real estate matters. And I am your host, Osman with House Einstein. And with me is Hamish Crabb. Welcome, Hamish.
Hello, Osman. It's good to be here. The most amazing podcast in the entire universe. Pleasure to be a part of it. Quite the honor. And let's make it a good one. Let's keep that title.
Wait. I said the most amazing real estate podcast, didn't I? Oh, not just
the, no.
I don't want to brag.
Fair. Okay. The most amazing real estate podcast. Absolutely.
This is our 39th podcast. We are back at it after a short hiatus. And today we are going to be talking about a variety of matters in real estate. But before we get started, let me remind new listeners that our mission here at the House Einstein podcast is very similar to our mission as a brokerage, and that's to help you make a smarter real estate decision. I'm your host, and I've been in real estate for about 20 years. Prior to that, I worked in the investment community, and this podcast is an accessory to what we do. It's not our main gig. We primarily help buyers and sellers make smarter decisions as real estate agents here in Boulder, in Denver, all the way down to Castle Rock in some cases. I've actually done deals in Colorado Springs and southern neighborhoods of Fort Collins. We also touch the mountain towns in Boulder County, as well as the resort towns, Winter Park, Breckenridge, Frisco. And if you're shopping in those areas, we're happy to help you. If you're not, you're welcome to reach out to us as well, and we might find you a referral partner. But for purposes of keeping my attorney happy, this podcast is entertainment. And that means please don't sue us if we give you information that you then go to buy or sell real estate and you're unhappy with the results. This podcast for you is entertainment. If you happen to be a client, just reach out and call us. We are here to serve you. You are our number one when it comes to priorities. And Hamish, I blanked right over your bio. What are you doing here?
Oh, not much. no. Well, for the purpose of this podcast, I help produce it, put together the thumbnail and get it up there on the interwebs. Though on a day-to-day basis, I'll help all of the agents at Hans Einstein do their best. I'll help client duties, contract management, contract writing in some cases, all the way to the marketing of the listings and even showings for buyers. So really a jack of all trades, master of none. But it's a good time. And once again, pleasure to be here. Absolutely.
Yep. Thanks so much for joining this lovely afternoon in Boulder in early April 2024.
It's a gorgeous
and
day.
It is a stunningly gorgeous day, and we're recording a podcast. But let's make it happen.
Yeah.
So let's go through our topics du jour. We'll be talking about market conditions, primarily in the city of Boulder and Boulder County. We'll also talk about we'll talk about one particular new listing that we have coming on probably before this podcast hits your ears. It will be live. We have a sale of the week that occurred that I think is a great illustration of the intelligence of prioritizing location. And then there's a couple of news pieces that we're going to walk you through, including Aspen's first $100 million sale that's in the news. And then we'll be wrapping it up.
Big stuff. Yeah, I'm interested in the Aspen sale. So let's work towards that. First up in the books, though, some market conditions.
First up in the books, market conditions. And Hamish, you'll probably notice I did not say anything about the tell me something I don't know segment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there will likely be many examples of telling you something you don't know as we go through this podcast. So I'll just call them out as they occur.
Nice.
Rather than having one specific tell you something you don't know.
It may come back too.
It may come back. This is the second week in a row that we haven't had anything particularly specific to talk about in that segment. Okay, let's jump in.
Okay.
So, market conditions. The MLS just published statistics on last month's market activity. It is too early for these statistics to really be fully baked because what happens is a lot of closings are stacked toward the end of the month, and then it takes the real estate agents who listed the home a couple of days to process their data on the MLS, to input their data. Sometimes they have assistants doing it, and it just isn't immediate. So it's Wednesday of the first, it's the first week of April, and it's Wednesday. In theory, most of them are already in, but if you're thinking about this data from a accuracy perspective, keep in mind that early data can change a little bit, and what happens is more sales are added, not less. So some statistics are conservative, like sales volume. Mm. But let's just jump right into the stats. How's that sound?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, hold on. There's a little story before we jump in. And the short answer before we really get into the numbers is the market's actually quite active. We're seeing more activity, more buyers jumping in, even though rates are higher. I think the new rate environment is just now expected. A lot of buyers are also not, affected by rates because they're paying cash, mm-hmm. and they're moving their capital allocation from something else into real estate. And real estate is an inflation hedge. We're going to talk about that more in the last segment when we're talking about the Aspen sale. And they're neutral to fluctuations in mortgage rates. There's still lots of buyers that are not neutral, that are really kicking themselves for not having pulled the trigger 2 or 3 years ago. But we're going to talk about what's happening. So, and we're going to talk about one particular deal that we just put under contract. Maybe we shouldn't mention the address, but it was an extremely aggressive maneuver to get our buyers under contract because we could see what's happening in the market. And to show them, I actually pulled down the data. So we were comparing three different properties, one in Niwot, one in Lafayette, one in Louisville. All three would work. We looked at a lot more than three homes, but these were the three that were likely targets during their visit here to Colorado. And they're data scientists. They like to see the numbers. And so we were thinking about offers on two different listings, and I pulled down the data in the neighborhood for other sales that occurred in the last 12 years. We looked at the over-under, so to speak. We looked at how many of those homes sold for less than list, how many sold for more than list, and what the median negotiated premium or discount was. And then we also looked at how many other homes that really would have been worth writing an offer on in this neighborhood appeared. And for the new house in Lafayette that we decided not to offer on, there was nothing in the last 12 months that was comparable that sold. It's the only listing in 12 months in this particular block of, say, 200 houses. And in Louisville, there were more sales that were comparable. And the Louisville sale was much more, the Louisville listing was much more in line with what they were looking for, particularly because they wanted to downsize. So we focused our attention on that one rather than the one in Lafayette. But in both cases, we looked at the median sale price, how much over list people had been paying or under list, which ones sold for more than the list, which ones sold for less, locations and updates and all of those things to better advise them on how to win this property. And we went in early, very early in the listing period, even before the listing period, honestly, aggressive. And we made an offer the seller couldn't intelligently refuse. There was no dead That's horse right. in their bed. But yeah. It's the kind of offer where you're the listing agent and you're like, look, it's above what we thought we were going to get you. It's cash. It's closing fast. It has limited inspection contingencies. And it's with an agent, us, we're on the buy side, who have been doing this for over 20 years. And they're telling you that this is like a 3-time or 4-time client in the family, all of which have been smooth. Is there going to be a better one in the bushes in 3 or 4 days? Maybe, but you should probably take this one because it's better than every, it's like a wish list of what you might want from a buyer. So, and we even gave them a post-closing occupancy, which turned out to be vital. They really wanted that. And so that solved all their issues before the property really was fully on market. So that was hyper aggressive and because of market conditions. So I wanted to share that story that it's not just academic, these market conditions, that it's interesting to look at the county and it's interesting to look at the city. But if you want to get actionable data, you have to look at a target property and then you have to look at the comps in the last 12 months, and you have to look at the active competitors that exist today, and then you formulate your strategy based on that market intelligence. And that's actionable information. So that's why I put that aggressive behavior bullet on there, Hamish. I wanted to share that there's a drill down. And now what we're about to talk about is the 40,000-foot level.
Well, off the back of that too, we talked very early on in one of our podcasts about opportunity costs. And when you go and look at other properties that have sold in that neighborhood that are comparable and see how frequently they tend to hit the market, that gives you a good idea too, right? And also right. factors in. And so it was quite cool revisiting that this year. Actually, we're at a year anniversary with the client that we were discussing that with last year.
Oh.
So I'll let you know after the pod.
I need to reach out to those clients on 4th Street in Newlands. Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I hope they're listening. They're lovely people, the same sort of analysis. And it's sort of a strange interpretation of opportunity cost because it isn't about money already spent, which is classic opportunity cost. It's really addressing future opportunity cost. So you look at the last 12 months and you ask yourself, all right, there were 20 sales in the last 12 months of this property type, price range, and location. Of those, maybe there were five worth buying, and I've got one in my sights, in my gun sights or whatever you want to use, my target range.
I'm looking at one,
I'm looking at one now, and I'm thinking about offering. And how much am I going to kick myself if a better house appears next week? Well, there were five other houses in the last 12 months. Of those five, where does the one I'm about to write an offer on rank? And if it ranks high, you're probably pretty confident that you're not going to see a better one show up. So that should guide your aggressiveness in terms of offer competitiveness, price, contingencies, closing dates, all those things.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Hamish, for bringing up that concept.
No problem. Okay.
That being said, so let's start at the county level. And we're only going to talk about Boulder County and then the city of Boulder. And maybe we'll talk about one of the L's, like Lafayette. But we also cover Denver and all the neighborhoods in Denver. I want to be clear about that. Like, I tend to focus on Boulder just because it's a city I know and love and have lived in for 20 years. But we do plenty of deals outside of the city of Boulder. We just can't have a three-hour podcast to talk about market activity in every city in the Front Range. But we have the data, and we certainly can walk you through what's going on if you are a client or prospective client. All right, so let's talk about Boulder County first. And I think I don't know if I should share. Well, let's just skip sharing screen and jump right into it. Boulder County. Hold on a second. There we go. Boulder County. So this is March data. Detached property only. I guess I'm going to go ahead and share screen. I don't know why I can't share screen. It's the same little charts that they actually have buttons to share. But the intention is you're supposed to be sharing this data with prospective clients or active clients. I think we are. So I'm going to go ahead and share screen. And if the president of the MLS has a problem with it,
she can call me.
They've called me before, and they can call me again. It's not the first time I've had my hand slapped, but I think it just makes sense to share screen. So here we are.
All right.
This is what your agent, if they're licensed and pay for the MLS, have access to. And in northern Boulder, northern counties, in Broomfield to Fort Collins, it's pretty much all IRES. And starting in Broomfield, it tends to switch over a little bit to ReColorado. But the database, in theory, is pulling from both. We typically see some small inconsistencies between ReColorado and IRES data, just 100% to be clear on that. So when we focus on Boulder counties and Boulder County and cities in Boulder, I use IRES. If we're focusing on Denver, I switch to ReColorado because in theory, the data is better. And at the end of the time period, after a few weeks, they should match up, but they don't always. And I don't always know why. But here we go. Boulder County, detached property only. New listings, 355 new detached single family houses hit the market last month. That's an increase of 3.8% year over year. Homes for sale. This is total active inventory. We were at 486, which is up 7.4% year over year. Under contract and pending. This is the property that someone wrote an offer on, and they, in theory, can't sell it to anybody else. There are 308 in March under contract. There were 308. That's an increase of 27% year over year. That's a really large increase.
Yeah.
And it's March, which is not a thinly traded month. So we're seeing a very significant increase in March. In February last month, the question is this a trend? Last month, there were 243. And we back it up to February of 2023, 243 over 202, 243 over 202 minus the 1. That's a 20% increase last month. So last month we saw 20% year over year. This month we're seeing 26.7%, or call it 27% year over year. So that's a significant increase in pending sales. Well, hold on. I guess I should back up. My scientists are going to hear the word significant and ask me if I did a statistical analysis and what is the P equal. And sorry, I shouldn't have used that word. It's a major increase. It's a likely significant increase. The sample size is large. I think that if we dumped this into our charts, you would see that it was outside of the standard deviation. I haven't done that yet, but I will if you really want to see it. Okay, closed sales. Just for funsies, because we like our data and we love our data scientists who appreciate the standard deviation bounds. Okay, 11% increase in total sales volume for single family houses, detached houses in Boulder County last month. So 246 houses sold, an increase of basically 11%. And days on market. You know, this days on market data, I'm not a huge fan of, because it tends to be inaccurate because agents refresh listings. So I'm always hesitant to report on days on market. I just happen to click through and now we're looking at it. So I'll tell you about it. 34, an increase of 13.3% for single family houses for the median. And then let's jump to sales price, which I have much more faith in as actually being statistically valid. $805,000 was the median sold price, which is a decrease of 10.3%. And we should always look at, if you're going to look at that, you should also look at price per square to see if that lines up too. And price per square is very similar, 10% down year over year. So compared to a year ago, sale prices are down and sales volume is up. And pending is up. So if you're still sitting on the sidelines waiting, I mean, you could see you were so smart. You didn't buy in 2022 when prices were $400 a square that month, shockingly. Mm-hmm. You didn't buy in February where it was $347. And you didn't buy in April when it was $354. You waited. Great. And now you have an opportunity to buy in the low threes. Are we headed lower? I don't think so. Not when sales volume is rising. And homes for sale are only up 7.4%. New listings are only up 4%, but under contract is up 27%. So prices are a function of supply and demand, people. And my armchair, better than most qualified opinion, is that you're looking at more activity. And if rates start to drop, which everyone says they expect, this could be quite a opportune time to lock something down to buy. Hamish. Yes. I know you got something to say, so I'm gonna stop sharing screen so I can see what you look like again. There you are.
It's me. It's my face. So a few thoughts. I'm thinking, you know, when rates were initially rising in 2022, we were talking a lot about sellers being a little bit less interested in listing their homes unless, say, you know, change of life circumstances. Those things you can't necessarily control 100%. I could list, you know, divorce, job change, death and family, big things. Marriage, if I'm trying to choose an optimistic thing. You know, over a certain amount of time, I also imagine that the market gets used to a change in rates, right? So we had historically low rates during the pandemic and a little while afterwards. And during that time, things went crazy and stuff was kind of flying off the market. And we've seen kind of a halt to that. And last year especially was anecdotally, and I think in the data too, somewhat slower than it has been in the past. To me, it appears that the market right now, everybody's kind of adjusting to what the rates actually are. And we have more inventory than we usually would. I think a decent amount trailing over from 2023. And then also, I'm curious too, if this is kind of like, at this point, sellers are, I'd rather sell just because I like to sell rather than their hands being forced by a change of life circumstance. Yeah, my musings. My thoughts.
Well, all of it is accurate. To your TED talk,
yep.
People do tend to group their real estate purchases around major life decisions, and it's a lot of money. It can be incredibly stressful. That's one of the reasons people choose us as a team, is we help calm them down. We don't rely on a bunch of smoke and mirrors to convince them to buy or sell. And most of the time when people are selling, I'm almost always telling them, are you sure you want to sell? Because
still,
you own real estate in one of the safest markets in the country. What are you going to do with the money? And I'm always curious what they're going to do with the money.
Every listing appointment, for the record, listeners.
Where are you investing the money? Because I want to know where they're putting the money, because I might want to co-invest too. And usually it's life change driven. Like, we have a new listing coming up at Gold Run, and buying something in Winter Park that could occasionally be used by the owner for their own use, that is something that's attractive. So, mm-hmm. And a student rental at Gold Run is generating basically break even, not really exciting as an investment. It was sort of a hedge for college students that were owned. College students of the owner, right? Like, if they're going to go to CU, better to pay me than pay a slumlord, or, you know, have no payment for the mortgage. For the rent. Anyway, Hamish, you're absolutely right.
We're tracking.
I agree with you completely. It's major life changes. And the thing that I keep talking about, and I heard Barbara Corcoran was just talking about it too, and that is, there's a buildup of pressure, like Augustus Gloop stuck in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory pipe, of this activity.
People Quite the have visualization. Put it
off. People have put it off, and pressure is building. Mm-hmm. And they put it off because rates were too high. They put it off because everyone wanted to see what was happening with the war in Ukraine or whatever. And now they're adjusted to new rates, which means they recognize that what they can afford in their monthly payments is what they can afford. And there's a lot of buyers that aren't monthly payment sensitive at all. Mm-hmm. They're more capital allocation sensitive, and they're seeing a high stock market. It's come back up. So they're moving money out of there and into real estate again. And they're also looking at this coming debt crisis. Some of the smarter long-range people. So, and the election coming up with potential cap gains changes for next year. We're having conversations with our sellers about that. Mm-hmm. So there's an increase in activity. But I think there's still a lot of pending – there's still a lot of pressure in the market for quite bubbly activity to froth up fast.
Yeah.
Because of the delay and people waiting for things to get better. And now they're recognizing that – this may be the new normal, and they may be waiting for no reason. And other than 2 years ago, March of 2022, the time to buy is usually 10 years ago. And eventually that March of 2022 will look like a great time to buy too. It will look like a tiny little blip
as
20
does.
Years from now.
Yeah.
As it always does. So the biggest challenge is finding a house worth buying, people, not timing the market.
And you're talking about like the bubbly froth up of the market too. It still rains true that the right house will always see the most demand and the most interest. And I mean, we just talked about being aggressive a few minutes ago. That stays true, especially when it's a very desirable, very well listed home.
Especially for something that's small is beautiful. I keep calling that kind of as a mental model of what this type of property is. It's not too large. It feels like a good downsizing option. It's not 1,000 square feet like a lot of the South Boulder ranches. And it's all on one level.
Mm-hmm.
So it appeals to baby boomers who are looking at their last 20 or 30 years of life and are likely going to have mobility issues, and climbing up and down stairs, even if you have great knees, as you get older and older, starts to get more burdensome. So why not have a flat house and a flat yard and be able
place.
To walk to a grocery store, not on the steep hillside. So there are all these things. Age, nobody likes that, Hamish. I don't like it, dude.
I heard it the other day. It's just been rattling around in there.
Nobody wants to age in place. It's such a painful and horrible description.
Yeah, don't think about it too long.
I want to age on the back of a motorcycle and, you know, screaming around the corner of a dirt trail. That, to me, sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no kidding. Okay, one thing. I don't know if it could even be, like, quantified or however it goes, but when rates were being hiked in 2022, I know the rhetoric for the large majority of people was they will come back down, You know, it's kind of like we're going to catch inflation and then they'll come back down and things will be reasonable again. And I think that rhetoric almost like directly influenced buyers, right? Because they hear, well, rate sensitive buyers, because they'll hear that and go, oh, okay, then I'll just wait, right? And now, you know, it's been two years and more I'm reading the rhetoric is like, this is probably where they're going to be until we see some dramatic changes where we want to see them. So, right, buyers, if they were smart, saved a little bit more for a down payment and are able to come back out onto the market.
I mean, first and foremost, people should always buy what they can afford comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a huge risk taker in life. So moving all of your assets into a real estate portfolio is not exactly a smart idea. But the bigger problem is not timing the market for rates. The biggest problem for the last decade has been finding a house worth buying.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still the problem. Mm-hmm. So I would focus your attention on making sure your search is
as a buyer.
Yeah, as a on the buy side. On the sell side, we see people leave money on the table. We see people mismarket their homes frequently, not do the repairs that are necessary, not improve it cosmetically, not stage the home. You and I have had lots of conversations about this, and I think going forward with all new listings, staging mm-hmm. is included. I think we're going to move the opposite direction of the discount brokerage. Especially once the buy side changes come into play, let the buy side agents that don't know how to justify their value fend for themselves, and let's upmarket our sell side because, one, there's more unrepresented buy side agents, or sorry, buy side buyer. There's more unrepresented buyers,
mm-hmm.
right? And if they're unrepresented and they knock on our listing door because our house looks so amazing and it's priced right and everything is addressed.
Marketed the heck out of it.
And they show up and they're like, oh my God, this house is so beautiful. Our job as this listing agent is to maximize the sale price for the seller, period.
Mm-hmm.
And if they tell us compromising information like, oh my God, we have to have it because the kids are going to be in school and my grandparents are right across the street. And then they're like, and you know, we could have bought something at $1.5 million, but I think this $1 million listing is what we're looking for. My answer is, yeah, there's been so much demand
yeah.
on this property. I think we're getting multiple offers. Do you want me to help you submit a winning offer that will get it done? You probably want to go $50,000 over list if you want this one. And I'm sorry to do that, okay? But that is my job.
Fiduciary.
For the seller representing their interests exclusively. That's why people hire buy-side agents is to not get fleeced by the listing agent.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm hired by the listing agent, that my job is switched to maximize to sale fleece. Price and take every penny the buyer has.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, that's what I'm going to now focus my attention on doing. So that's if you're looking at one of my listings, you're better off being represented. I don't know what else to tell you. And that representation should hopefully walk you through the comps and show you alternatives that might be a better deal. That's why you hire a buyer side agent. And we also do lots of buy side, right? We do both sides.
Yeah, we're actively doing both, currently under contract on both. So.
Not on the same deal.
Yeah, no.
Not on the same property. And I used to do more of those. And now I'm really uncomfortable if I'm asked to be a transaction broker because transaction brokers are supposed to be neutral. And it's really challenging. We have systems when I'm asked to do it. And I will walk you through what those systems are if we're forced into that position, but it's my least favorite
mm-hmm.
because there are inherent conflicts of interest with transaction brokerage that I don't think can be solved very easily.
Yeah. I haven't seen one yet. I've been here about 2.5 years. And if you're a longtime listener, you'll notice that I'm no longer speaking in terms of months. I think much to Osman's happiness.
For a long time, Hamish was like a newborn baby, and everyone described the newborn baby and how many months old they are.
Yeah. So like, I've been here for like 23 months and just
and 14 hours.
Yeah.
All okay, right. Let's jump into the city of Boulder. I don't think we're going to do Lafayette because we're running out of time. I'd like to keep this podcast mm-hmm. to about an hour. We have a client meeting coming up in 35 minutes, so we need to move a little faster.
Yeah.
Let's go to the city of Boulder. I'm going to share screen again. And by the way, your agent, if they know what they're doing, should be sharing screen with you very quickly and easily. They should not need to do this behind the scenes.
Like it's nothing to them.
It should be nothing to them if they're competent.
Same with navigating
City
IRES,
of Boulder, detached. Well, IRES, if you're a new agent, can be intimidating. Mm. You don't know what you're doing. And so you're stumbling around, and the last thing you want to do is stumble around on a video call in front of your client. But 20 years of manipulating this thing has some benefits. Okay, new listings. City of Boulder, 124 new houses hit the market last month. That's brand new listings to the market in theory, although some of them will be refreshes. 10% less than March of a year ago. Total active inventory of homes for sale, 215. That's an increase of 16%. And then the percentage under contract, there were 83 houses last month, month of March, 8% year-over-year increase in pending sales. And then sales volume dropped pretty hard, 25% less than a year ago. Only 58 houses sold last month.
Hmm.
And last week, we walked you through the percentage under contract. And under a million, it's extremely strong. I think it was close to 60%. In that 1 to 2 million, it was still pretty strong, roughly about 50%. But the moment you cross the $3 million tranche, it dropped to 9% of those homes are under contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a buyer's market above 3 million in the city of Boulder. And any agent that tells you differently doesn't know the data or is lying to you for some other reason. Okay, so that's a decrease from February, from last month. But keep in mind, not all the data's in. So we'll see. This number could get better. And then when we look at March of last year, we had 78 sales March of last year.
Mm.
February, we had 46. So February had a pretty big increase year over year, 46 to 66. And this month, currently, we're at 58 until all the title companies clean up this data. But I think, I mean, it may only go up a few houses. We'll double check in a couple days and see how it looks. I'm going to skip days on market because I'm not a huge believer in this database, but we'll jump to sale price. Sale price, $1.2 million was the median sale price in the city of Boulder for detached single-family houses last month, a decrease of almost 14%. And as always, you should look at, well, what about price per square foot? Price per square foot only dropped 5.5%, the median. So not quite as steep, but still a drop. And you know, keep in mind that we're talking about low sales volume, low volumes in the sample size for the city of Boulder. So there's a lot more volatility. And you can see that in the chart. I mean, look at how bouncy, right? If this was your heartbeat.
It's Bitcoin.
Like, yeah. So don't get too excited with these month over month price changes. What you really want to look at is something like 3 months average, like a rolling 3 month or a rolling 6 month, because it's much more reflective of reality. Then month over month with these smaller sample sizes. And I think that's it. We're going to skip Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a client and want me to walk through Lafayette, just schedule an appointment. We'll do it one-on-one specific to your situation or Longmont or Superior or Broomfield.
More than happy to do so. Yeah.
Any of the suburbs of Denver or the city of Denver itself or neighborhoods in Denver. We really believe firmly in helping you make a smarter real estate decision. And that requires a deep dive into the data. So don't hesitate, clients or prospective clients. Okay, moving on.
Right. Well, we have discussed this in the last podcast and have worked diligently to bring it to market. And it would be my honor to introduce to you 605 Alpine Avenue in Boulder. This home is, I could count the steps from North Boulder Park. It's very, very close to the ideal marketplace at downtown, and it is pretty well spec'd with some really neat energy efficient details, features, and huge fan of it. So it's 605 Alpine Avenue. I don't think we've completely finalized pricing yet, but we know it'll be active by the time this podcast comes out. And the true value on this one is the massive lot that the home sits on. So, Osman, I'll let you expand on that.
Well, one of many value elements, not just the only one. So clients bought this house a couple of years ago, and they reinvested in it and took care of it. So they installed a Tesla solar roof, not just the panels, but the shingles themselves. Mm. This is one of the first houses we have seen in Boulder that has Tesla shingles. They put in place a Tesla power wall. So now you have backup. And that's particularly useful if you wanted to try to optimize Xcel's new off-peak pricing.
Sorry.
Right? You could be charging that thing at night and running your house off it during the day. And the house also has a two-car detached garage. It's also north-south. Sorry, we're talking about their investments in it. They also put in a heat pump.
Yeah.
Which is not an inexpensive improvement to a property, but coupled with that solar system and power wall, you're going to have a very energy efficient living situation.
And usually, you know,
huge.
Usually you hear heat pump and you think like mini split. This is a ducted heat pump in place of the furnace. So really cool piece of tech. One of the first I've seen
in
a home.
I don't think mini split when I hear heat pump.
Oh, I do.
I think big heat pump.
No, you do?
Maybe we need to do a heat pump episode where we go down the rabbit hole.
I'm so ready for that. Really cool technology on those. Carry on. Sorry.
let's look for a heat pump expert. We can have them as a guest.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And learn a lot about heat pumps.
Yeah.
Obviously, heat pumps have been around for a while, but the technology has improved, and now they're being installed increasingly across the country, and particularly in places where municipalities or states or other entities, counties, are considering banning the installation of fossil fuel powered appliances.
Mm-hmm.
So that means electric is your only option. Propane or natural gas is no longer going to be permitted in new construction in a lot of locations, and city councils and other types of governments are considering strongly doing that. So getting ahead of the curve when it comes to heat pumps is actually really beneficial. And that's one of the big value adds of this house, is definitely the energy improvement upgrades. But it's also a 1950s or early 60s era, so mid-century ranch that currently the city of Boulder is not trying to protect. And the box-on-a-box ranch-style house with a full basement is one of the easiest to modify and improve on. We're going to talk about that in our sale of the week coming up. Why that's such a great platform, especially if it's in a good location. And this particular property is north-south oriented, which is the best orientation for minimizing solar shadows on your neighbor, which Boulder still has.
Mm-hmm.
It also is the most optimal for passive or active solar systems, which this house already has. So north-south orientation is the best orientation for real estate, and this one's got it.
That makes sense. Earlier today, the same shoot of this podcast, we went and checked out the competition, because you have to if you're making solid pricing decisions. And that was a point that Osmond brought up, as it being north-south facing. So, yeah, that all checks out. That full circle in my head.
We'll know exactly where it gets priced in about 30 minutes when we meet with our client to talk about it. But we did look at the competition, and there are two. So understanding the pros and cons of those competitors is really important for intelligent pricing. But ultimately, it'll be our client's decision. It is a spectacular home, and I have no doubt. I have high confidence and no doubt it will attract a buyer, and we'll be pricing it reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
So look for 605 Alpine.
It will be in the description. The market. Once it's active, I'll be putting it in this podcast and the last.
Excellent.
Yeah. And I'm making a little note, so don't forget that, because could you imagine?
All right, let's move on to the ghost of Christmas future for this house. And that is, by that I mean the sale of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So the sale of the week is 2980 Washington. And let me pull it up. 2980 Washington. There it is. So this property has been on the market and sold a few times in recent years. And the first time it is on the database in the MLS was in 2000, when somebody acquired the home for only $320,000. So this is 24 years ago. And they spent $320,000 and bought the house. But back then, it did not look like it did today. Back then, it was a much more modest home, built in 1947, so post-war. And that's really important when it comes to historic preservation. They are far less to care about a post-war home. And it was only a two-bed, one-bath sort of little bungalow. And the location, so let's back up a little further. This location in North Boulder is just east of Broadway by about three blocks, two and a half blocks east of Broadway. Mm-hmm. And it is it's just south of the Hawthorne Gardens, the growing gardens complex there, the community gardens that I used to be on the board for at Growing Gardens, the nonprofit. And it's just north of the Ideal Marketplace. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to get to Ideal. It's very easy to get to Hawthorne, cross Broadway, walk a few blocks, and you are at the Sanitas Trailhead. There's a pretty big price difference between east and west of Broadway. So this location is perceived as a value compared to, say, Newlands, where a similar home might be $1 million higher in some cases. Mm-hmm. Not the current home, but what it looked like. Sorry, not what it looked like in the 24 years ago, but today this house as could be a million as it sits today could be $1 million more. Now let's talk about the listing history. So somebody bought it for $320,000, and they owned it for a while. And during that time period, they did a massive remodel. We went through and looked at the permit history. I thought they might have demoed the whole house. It does not look like they did. They instead completely gutted, remodeled it, and added a second story. So in 2008, it came back on market, and the second story had been added. It was much more like a craftsman-style looking house at that point. And the square footage had increased from 1,000 and what was it? 1,021 total square feet, all on one level, no basement, to 2,030 square feet. Still no basement, but now a two-story. Mm. Now it's a five-bedroom house with three bedrooms on the upper, two on the main, and really quite attractive for that time period.
Yeah.
2008. So that's what... like 16 years ago, something like that. Oh. And the photos are horrific from that old listing. There's only 9 of them. But it's enough to get a sense of the interior. I mean, it's flash photography and really painful. It's got a nice covered patio in the back, nice backyard. And it's on the corner of Elder Ave and Washington, which, you know, corner lots have some pros and cons. You should always talk to your agent about the pros and the cons of corner lots. If they tell you all pros, get another agent. There are some negatives they should be describing too. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it didn't actually sell in that first listing period when it was listed in July of 2008 at $835, and it was on the market for about 2 months, and the seller had enough and pulled it off. And there's something confusing here because it was relisted. I don't know if it was relisted with another agent. It looks like a classic refresh pattern where the listing agent says, let's refresh it with a new listing, or they fired their old agent and put a new one on. I mean, we could look it up and answer that question. It doesn't really matter. This is from 2008. It eventually did sell at $790 at the end of October of 2008. Okay, let's fast forward. A whole bunch of more permits were pulled. And the house went from 2,030 square feet to 2,764 square feet. It also somehow magically lost a bedroom and gained a bathroom. It went from 5 bedrooms and 3 baths to being 4 bedrooms and 4 baths. And the lot size is still the same. I mean, there's a slight difference on the MLS, but that's just the tax assessor.
Yeah.
And this time around, so this home was, it just sold. It was listed in coming soon status in February, on February 23rd, and activated on March 1st, the beginning of the month. Didn't take long. 3 days later, it was under contract. So
speedy.
Moral of the story is, if you like the house, you have to see it right away. And if your agent's not available, you should choose a better agent who has systems for coverage. So I did do some traveling a couple of weeks ago. I was in Death Valley. And during that time period, Hamish was covering. Mm-hmm. Other agents on the team were available. I was still doing Starlink remotely every night to make sure we didn't drop any balls. And there's zero reason for somebody to miss a house like this. Because look, you know, that fast on market.
I mean,
under contract.
Yeah, what we were even in the market conditions, right? We're talking about aggressively pursuing a home before it even hits the mark, before it even becomes activated.
That's right.
You need to move.
Our listing that we, the one we just put under contract in Louisville, and I'm not going to mention the address, has 0 days on market because we got in there. We made it happen, and we my clients were aggressive. They understood the value of that, and so it will probably show 0 days on market when it's finally all the data is available. But this one under contract within 3 days of being active. And it sold for a significant discount, which I'm a little surprised by, given how quickly it went under contract. But they accepted a lower offer, so they listed it at 2.5. It sold for 2.432. So let's do the math. 2.432 over 2.5 minus the 1. So that's 2.7%, straight up the fairway of what we tell our clients for a new listing. Typically, brand new sells for list. But... if it's been on the market a few weeks, 1% to 3% is a pretty typical discount.
No listed concessions.
If you have cash and can close very quickly, sometimes you can get an even deeper discount. Sorry, Hamish, you were saying?
No listed concessions on this one?
No concessions.
Okay.
And just the deep discounts. Deep discount for a brand new list.
Yeah.
A brand new listing. And we don't know what happened here. It could have been that there were no other buyers. And so they went with this offer, and this was what was negotiated. But if you have cash, you have far more leverage to try to negotiate a better deal. So they managed to get a couple of percent off, and frankly, they bought a fantastic house. It looks amazing. I don't know why it's just, it's really not a Victorian house, but it's a mid-century with a second-story addition and an addition out the back. But if you look at the photos,
it's really charming.
It's tasteful. Yeah. It's functional. It opens to the backyard, and all homes open to the backyard. The kitchen and sort of the living area flows to an opening to the backyard. Like indoor outdoor transition is really well done. There's vaulted ceilings.
It's modest.
It's tasteful. There's nice built-in. It is modest. It's not a flashy house that is designed to impress the neighbors. It just looks like a quality home, and I think the buyer did a good job getting a good deal on it. Good floor plan. You know, bedrooms on the upper, decent size one on the main. So that's the story of this particular house and why location really matters, because every owner has done well with it, and likely every owner will continue to do well with it because it's such a functional, reasonably sized home in a very good location in the city of Boulder. And the eventual sale price, $880 a square with a 9,200 square foot lot and newer construction is something. So,
and it shows
well chosen,
you know, the remodel potential of our listing Alpine. It doesn't have to be an ultra modern contemporary home like the one across the street from this Washington home. I just saw the drone photo, but there's a lot of room depending on where you want to take things,
right? I mean, this could be the future of 605 Alpine. It also doesn't have to be the future. You can enjoy it as it is for now, but know that north-south orientation really lends itself well to redevelopment, and a detached garage in a much larger than typical lot. It's not even blocks away from North Boulder Park. You literally walk out your backyard and you are practically kitty corner from North Boulder Park. So, it has tons of privacy, which is a distinction between some of its competitors that do not have that. Yeah. So if you're into living close to the park but don't want everyone else to know how close you live to the park, 605 Alpine is a smart choice. If you're much more into not showing off to everyone else about what you bought.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's a cute. I quite like this 605 Alpine. It's good to like your own listings. I like this one.
It is great. Yeah. It also has a secret.
I don't know the secret. Do I know the secret?
Do you know about the secret?
I don't think I know about the secret.
It has a bomb shelter under it.
What?
I didn't tell you that.
No.
They've never opened it. They've never gone into it. But it has a bomb shelter underneath the concrete slab, underneath the deck. And that is something I'm sharing in the podcast because it is something we would have to disclose to all buyers, too, that exists. It's not a flaw, but it's something that they should probably know about. There is a thing under it, and the access port is under the carpet and has never been accessed by our owners.
Oh.
They're like, cool, there's a bomb shelter down there. This would leave me up, staying up all night.
Are you
like,
kidding?
Yeah. How do you know there's not a safe down there with bars of gold? Like, really? You got to go down there and see.
Can we not add it, add it to the square footage?
No. It's not heated space English.
That's the coolest thing. Are you kidding me? You've been keeping that from me?
Yeah. Now your curiosity is peaked.
Yeah, I'm going to sell this.
There are airports.
House. Yeah.
There are airports. I don't know what to call it. Air vents. Yeah. On the patio. That's what those vents are. Are for the super secret bomb shelter.
Okay. Well, I'm writing that down. I don't know when it's coming up in conversation, but that's for sure getting done.
First listing with a Tesla solar roof and first listing with a bomb shelter for you.
Yep. A lot of firsts today.
Okay.
Cool. That's sweet. Okay.
Yeah. So maybe the title of this podcast should be something about... I'll let you work on it, but something that teases people about that.
Yeah.
Let's move on because I'd really like to wrap this up. Mm. We have a call coming up in 15 minutes.
Hurtling towards us.
So let's hit the news.
Yeah.
In the news, well, North Boulder could see a new townhome development. The Daily Camera has an article that was published, I think this is today. And
yesterday.
If you're not familiar with this location, North Boulder, this is far North Boulder, very close to our office, and also very close to... It's very close to the Holiday neighborhood. It's south of Dakota Ridge. There's a lot of industrial stuff. This is very close to the homeless shelter and also where the old strip club, the bus stop, used to be for people that have lived in our community for a while. Pretty hilariously named.
I'm glad you
and strangely beloved. Well, strangely beloved, Hamish, because the bus stop. Literally, there was a ceremony when it finally transferred hands and was redeveloped. There were like all these old dancers that showed up and community members that were mourning the loss of the strip club. Anyway, this is just south of the Comfort Inn Suites. Just south of the corner of Lee Hill and Broadway. And they're talking about, I think, a 21-unit development. And, of course, some of the owners of the industrial businesses are very unhappy that this is going to be developed. But the writing's on the wall. North Boulder has a community plan, and the industrial use is not the highest and best economic use of these parcels of land. I'm sad to see it, too. I want more mechanics and more industrial use, more art in our community, too. And replacing it all with housing is really sad. So I feel that pain, but I also think the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
So check out the North Boulder sub-community plan, Hamish. We should put that in the show notes.
Okay.
And the plan does say we should encourage the preservation of industrial areas, but really the plan is about more housing and mixed use that's not exactly industrial, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, this new project has been proposed, and we will see if it occurs. And the next piece of news, we'll talk about this one really quickly. So a couple of months ago, we had Ian on our podcast, and Ian was talking about representing a buyer who was attempting to purchase property that had been fraudulently listed. Mm-hmm. Listed. The seller was a fake seller.
Yeah.
And today, the Denver Post has an article that is basically the exact same story that our client experienced a couple of months ago. We were able to keep our client from losing any money. But if you are thinking about buying vacant land, you really better be sure it's actually being marketed by the seller and not by some scammer. I don't really understand how the scammer would eventually get the money, but all it takes is a title company that misses it and thinks they're communicating with the real seller. And it happens. People do remotely list property. We're about to sell a property where the sellers are in the Netherlands. We happen to know them personally, and we represented them on the buy side. They're real, but
it's the risk.
If I hadn't met this, And, you know, and the seller doesn't want to get on a video call and verify identity. We've had a couple of people on WhatsApp reach out to us and buy or sell and trying to get us to engage with them. They text us and then they want to move over to WhatsApp because texting the U.S. phone numbers clearly costs some money and WhatsApp costs nothing. And the moment I tell them, let's do a video call, we just need to verify your identity first, they just disappear because they're a scammer.
And that podcast, if you're interested in the full story, is podcast 32. It's came out in January.
Okay, let's move on to the far, far sexier story.
Yeah, no kidding.
Of Steve Wynn and Thomas Petterfee are about to hand Aspen its first $100 million home sale. So this is in the journal. The actual address is not disclosed, but Steve Wynn is the guy that's the casino developer. You know, probably a billionaire. And the seller is a professional hockey player. And, you know, Aspen Real Estate is its whole other thing. So back when I worked on Nantucket, we often talked about Aspen and Jackson Hole and other very high-end resort markets as benchmarks for what was happening on Nantucket. And it's the same story of a very exclusive playground for very, very wealthy people with almost no workforce housing. And it's a magical place. I mean, we used to spend a lot of time there. I used to spend a lot of time there with my ex about 15 years ago, 17, 20 years ago.
Aspen.
Amazing place. What was Aspen. That? Aspen. Mm-hmm. We would spend time there in the summers. So the reason I brought this article up is not to goggle over $100 million sale price. Okay, that's fine. It's a lot of money. It's a huge property. There's no argument. Okay, I think it's 22,000 square feet, has 11 bedrooms. I just think about all those bathrooms. Like, who's cleaning those? Like, that's a lot of square footage. They're maintained to heat and cool. But of course, when you have this much wealth, you have you have staff, you have your house manager who's handling these types of things. Mm-hmm. But the economic logic of this, so Steve Wynn is not a fool for spending $100 million in Aspen. It's not about buying or spending the way that most people think about buying and spending. It's about reallocation of capital. And it's about a lifestyle choice. Mm-hmm. For you and your family and your friends while you're reallocating capital. It's not one or the other, it's both. And we are facing, as a country, a looming debt crisis. Now, you could say this is not my wheelhouse, but at this point, it probably is my wheelhouse because I spend so much time studying this stuff. And I have an MBA in finance. I worked on Wall Street. I've worked in the investment community for a long time. And one of the things I've not quite understood is how we can continue to run our country on such massive deficits, especially at a time of higher interest. It is inevitable we're going to run into a debt crisis, and it's going to happen sooner rather than later. So what is anti-inflationary? The classic hedge for inflation is real estate. And if you're not tied, people spending $100 million, our clients spending $2 million, $1.3 million are not tied to mortgage rates. So somebody spending $100 million is clearly not tied to mortgage rates. They don't care about rates. This is about moving money from one allocation to another. And it probably is a wise move when you know at some point in the near future you're going to see a hyperinflationary environment, because that's one of the very few ways out of this sort of debt crisis. Right. I was reading something about the last time. And the last time the U.S., or I think they were referencing the U.S., had this type of experience, the landowners did really well in agriculture, but because of rent controls, the rental property owners did not do as well. So the potential break on the inflation hedge for average investors, not Steve Wynn buying a $100 million property, he doesn't care about income, right? But average income property investors who are looking at this and saying, wait, in theory, will inflation continue to rise and increase the asset value of the houses? It should, but rent control could potentially be a break on that. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of rattling and torch lighting to try to get rent control in Colorado. I think it's a disaster. Show me rent control anywhere in the world that has worked. And I'm more inclined to listen and think about this, but I've yet to see an example that actually was economically beneficial mm-hmm. in the long run and didn't create all these other effects. You know, they called it squeezing the balloon.
Yeah.
You end up with really wealthy people and really poor people in housing complexes, and it just, it's the middle class gets decimated.
Right. Yeah, no, one thing, like a term that I hear get thrown around a ton is land bank. Is that same thing for this type of what we're discussing? Or is it, when it's land bank, does it have to be an undeveloped piece of property?
Land banking is exactly the concept that's intuitive for people when those words are used.
Okay.
The irony is there actually is a land bank on Nantucket.
Oh, really?
and its job, so here's just a side Nantucket story. Its job is they collect a certain percentage of every transaction, and I think it's like 2% or something.
It's a good job to have.
And it just builds this giant chunk of cash, and then they go buy property that they can serve for a variety of reasons. And it might be, so for example, they bought a property across from the youth hostel I worked at many decades ago, and which was actually, it's a long story, it was owned by somebody that I'm connected to, and they demolished it because the house had no value, and now it's a direct passage to the beach. Mm. So the idea of the land bank was to purchase property, just like open space, to purchase property that benefits the entire community.
Okay.
But land banking, in the way it's more right. commonly used, not for Nantucketers, yeah. is the concept of just heard a knock.
I heard that too.
Very strange sound. I don't know what that was, but I don't see any vehicles.
Good luck. We lose Osmond on this podcast.
Yeah, strange knock on my door. So the idea is that you're allocating to real estate assets.
Mm.
And land banking doesn't have any income. You're just buying it cheap and holding it. But the problem is that there's no free lunch in America. You pay taxes, property right. taxes. One option out of that is agriculture. And leasing the property to a farmer and having agriculture receipts, which yeah. is why one of my neighbors is very busy trying to turn his land holdings into pasture land up here, because that way it gets taxed under ag tax rates, not undeveloped
forestry.
Land.
Yeah, okay. I'm tracking.
Forestry is a zoning rating.
Right.
That's necessarily the land use.
Okay.
If you're, and there's this whole, Boulder County has an entire website devoted to discouraging people from trying to turn their property into ag land because they know they lose the tax receipts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make it difficult. That it's not going to be an easy layup if you're trying to turn your private parcel of undeveloped land into
agriculture,
you know, pasture.
Yeah.
Good luck. I mean, it's not, you need like several, I don't know all the rules. My recollection is significant amounts of receipts to prove that you're using this as income. It's not a hobby and it's not a tax dodge.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, tax dodging is exactly why people are doing it. So.
And we are not financial advisors. In fact, this is an entertainment podcast. Just revisiting
right.
that.
Right. This is an entertainment podcast. Do not rely on my advice for buying, for land banking. So I think that's about it. We need to wrap up, Hamish, because yeah. we have a call in 3 minutes.
Yep.
So let's do, so beware. Last thing I want to say on the topic before we move on is that there's a lot of articles, a lot of people shoving it in your face that they can rent the same house for half the price it takes to own it. That's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it changes, but it will change. Because it has to change. We can't keep doing what our federal government's doing with how we're financing our economy. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So hold on tight when it happens. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up.
Good note to end on. Osmond, I'm going to defer to you for this one. We have limited time and you're just so eloquent.
Oh, come on. I've been doing all the talking.
Okay. Well, if you've made it this far, thank you so much. Be sure to check out all of the other types of content we create. Osmond is a fantastic author of our newsletter. You can find it on our website up at the top, select newsletter, and you'll get all sorts of takes on fresh listings, notable sales, what's new with House Einstein, market data, and more. And I'm missing a few things. Like, comment, subscribe.
Well, we really appreciate you listening this far. And I think that I also want to mention that if you want a sense of how we market homes for our sellers, check out our YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a sense of our how we think about neighborhoods when we advise our buyers, check out our YouTube. If you're thinking about buying remotely, call me and we'll send you private links to homes that we have reviewed for our relocation clients. We don't put those videos online for the public to see, but sometimes they're an hour long where we're walking through a house, pointing out all the pros and cons, and that's so you don't have to hop on a flight and you don't miss out on the house because you're in another state. So we do that all the time. Those are some of the services we offer buyers and sellers. And we are here if you need us. And to find us, visit HouseEinstein.com. And thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.